It's another fine Sunday here in the Great Smokies, and it's time for Wordplay, the program about, for, and by poets and creative writers. I'm Jeff Davis, your host today. Sebastian's off this fine sunny day giving readings of his own work. Today's show celebrates the work of Jonathan Williams, who passed on last Sunday at the age of 79. Jonathan was a key figure in the New American Poetry, that is, the non-academic poetry celebrated in Donald Allen's anthology of that name in 1962. The Black Mountain poets, most of whom had converged at Black Mountain College in the early 1950s, were major movers in the reopening of American poetry in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. And Jonathan was a major figure among them, both as a poet and as a publisher. Jonathan began his Jargon Press while he was still at Black Mountain College, studying with Charles Olson. Under the Jargon imprint, he brought out volumes by many poets and writers, several of whom, notably Olson and Robert Creeley, time has shown to have been among the major spirits of their day. Others were by writers who remain somewhat unknown, like Mina Loy and Alfred Starr Hamilton. Perhaps time will raise them from obscurity down the road. Jonathan was a fine poet himself, of course, and in 2005, Copper Canyon brought out Jubilant Thicket, a selected poems that included some 500 of his poems from all phases of his career. It's a wonderful book, chock full of Jonathan's insight, inspiration, craft, and humor. Today, we'll listen to a reading from Jubilant Thicket that Jonathan gave at City Lights Books in Silva, one of the great cultural oases tucked away in the mountains of western North Carolina. So here's Jonathan from May 27, 2005.
It's difficult to read cogently out of this book because there are 400 to 500 poems in it, and I only have an hour at the maximum when I'm going to subject you to these. And they're of all different sorts, since they've been written over quite a long number of years. I'm going to start with the latest, and the latest are called metaphors, and they're something I started writing about 10 years ago. The only law is that each line have 4 words, which is kind of a strange measurement system, but so is haiku, and so are lots of things. It allows me to sort of delve into, the contemporary style, which is tough, raucous, quick, and it does have the advantage of making you listen closely if you want to, but it's what it's for, is to kind of sharpen the ears. I think it was Hercules, who had a pair of small serpents enter his ears every morning so he could hear better. Sounds like a good thing. These are metaphors. Subtitle is Voces Intimae, which is a name of a string quartet by Sibelius. Here we go. Courtesy of Raoul Middleman. So what did the Zen monk say to the hot dog vendor? Make me one with everything. A play by Jardiel Pordella is titled Carlo Monte in Monte Carlo. Here's a little memorial for the late, great clarinetist, Artie Shaw. Le Artie Shaw, Artie Shaw. Estimated acres of forest Henry David Thoreau burned down in 1844, trying to cook fish he had caught for dinner. 300. From nowhere, a crow came with me as I left the city. I still remember the classic Yiddish joke. Ferdinand Ruge, my English master at St. Albans, used to tell. It went like this. So what is the difference between the Stoic and the Cynic schools of philosophy? Well, the Stoic is what brings the babies, and the Cynic's where you wash the dishes. Oh, my. Most people over 80 don't buy green bananas. The name's Valpo Drought. Thomas Jekyll's Sunflower Fire Dogs. Home, sweet, sweaty home. One Edinburgh publican has a sign over the bar that says, if assholes could fly, this would be an airport. Buddy Hackett. They told him to behave as though he were an egg. He lay down on the floor. They asked him what he was doing. I'm a fried egg. Sirius listens to Dumbledore, even if he doesn't like what he hears. Dizzy, oh, John Burks, you really were the works. As the French say, may the flames of Islam consume your degenerate lifestyle, you depraved crab louse. A celadon-colored velvet armchair. Thelma's kitchen. Black-eyed peas simmer all day as God intended. We all start plucking turkeys this next Tuesday. Tall can of corn. Richard, this is a Richard Craven poem. He's a wonderful artist in Charlotte now, I think. He writes very good poems. A Richard C. poem. The dinosaur, dinosaur. Simon spent most of the day in the phone box down there by the duck pond. Had seen that someday the summer sun would not throw his shadow. Save your bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. My daughter can spot a cute boy at 150 yards. What she can't find is a tomato in the refrigerator. Lou Donaldson, picking coleslaw in Arkansas. What's your favorite Irish joke? My favorite Irish joke is, what's green and stays out at night? Give up? The answer is patio furniture. It was in a dance hall in Leadville, Colorado, in 1883 that Oscar Wilde saw a sign that seemed to him the only rational instance of art criticism he had ever beheld. It said, please do not shoot the piano player. He's doing his best. The stage delicatessen still deals gently with Iowans who don't know which is the bagel and which is the lox. As a gift to friends, Mencken signed Gideon Bible's Compliments of the Author. Never say die, says Salman Rushdie. My next book will be titled Buddha, That Fat Bastard. A Pot by Yakuhiro Kohara, the elusive wabi-sabi. On to the top of the hill where the Osage oranges grow. Homage to Lee Smith. One-eyed Jesse Waldron lives all by himself up in the Paw-Paw Gap. Elvis is alive and she's beautiful, said Madonna after meeting K.D. Lang. B.B. King, nobody loves me but my mama, and she may be jiving too. I, Borage, bring courage. G.K. Chesterton sends a telegraph to his wife. Am in Wolverhampton, where ought I to be? Hawkshead, Cumbria. Visitor, is this a pottery gallery? Staff, no, this is where we are showing Beatrix Potter's pictures. Visitors, turning to a friend, hear that, Jack? They're showing films. Parliament is considering lowering the age of male consent to 42 to cope with the wave of unbridled dust now sweeping the British public. Dear Elvis, thank you for carpeting all the ceilings of our hearts. Copperhead in the Hemericallis. Beating luminous wings in the void in vain. Jesse Helms, high school principal and band teacher, was Ray House. And Ray says, Jesse and me talked about them Robert Mapplethorpe pictures and what was in there. It's objectionable. It's not for good, decent folk. Cubism was bad enough with all them people riding them bicycles backwards. And finish that series. So Life Goes On, very much like a piece by Morty Feldman. The next section is called Mahler, and it's a series of poems about the movements of the symphonies, the 10 symphonies. And it's quite a long work, but I'll just read you the text that involved the Symphony Number 5. It's got a little epigraph from Mahler. How blessed, how blessed a tailor to be. Oh, that I had been born a commercial traveler and engaged as baritone at the opera. Oh, that I might give my symphony its first performance 50 years after my death. First movement is called Funeral March. Mahler, from his studio on the 11th floor of the Hotel Majestic, New York City, hears the cortege of a fireman moving up Central Park West. One roll of the drum. One road where the wind storms, where cherubim sing bird songs with human faces and hold the world in human hands and drift on the gold road where black wheels smash all. One roll of the drum. Stormily agitated. To be a block of flowers in a wood, to be mindlessly in flower, past understanding, to be shown on endlessly, to be there, there, and blessed. Scherzo. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Little birds waltz to and fro in the piano, at Meyrenig on the Vertese, and up the tree cacophony. 1, 2, 3. Adagietto. One feels one clematis petal fell. Its circle is all glimmer on this pale river. Fifth movement is a rondo finale. Schoenberg. I should even have liked to observe how Mahler knotted his tie, and should have found that more interesting and instructive than learning how one of our musical bigwigs composes on a, quote, sacred subject. An apostle who does not glow preaches heresy. His tie was knotted with a claw on the dead run. Here are a few of a form I like to write in quite a lot called a clarihue. Is that familiar to people? It's not all that common, but these were invented by a schoolboy in London and in the late 19th century. His name was Edmund Clarihue Bentley. So he named these little poems he was making clarihues. And this is kind of how they run. It's AA, BB. There's not much more to it than that. It's mostly about a person. The digestion of Milton was unequal to Stilton. He was only feeling so-so when he wrote Il Penseroso. He was 16, I think, when he started writing these things. Nobody's ever been able to match him. People like Auden have tried, John Sparrow, Constance Lambert. There was a remarkable exchange at one point between a man whose name, his name is William Norman Ewer. He was a World War I poet. And he wrote a clarihue which went, "How odd of God to choose the Jews." And our friend Leo Rostin countered back, "Not odd of God, goyim annoyim." I've written a few. I'll read you just a few. Never read James Dickey when the weather is hot and icky. The time for Dickie Duncan's Wind of Frost is on de punkin. Babe Ruth, in all truth, weren't born like you and me. He come down out of a tree. Here's a pound, Clara, you. It helps to know that Ezra Pound was born in the little town of Haley, Idaho. Ezra Loomis Pound bought a pound of Idaho potatoes. The Haley Comet always ate those. Why did Professor J.R.R. Tolkien never really come clean about the Scientologists in cupboards in the house of L. Ron Hubbard? Hank D. Thoreau too seldom used O. de Cologne and was asked to leave at Walden on his own. Puccini is arguably better than zucchini, but a pound of spinach could write a better symphony than Zdeněk Fibich. Don't bother if you don't know him. Franz Liszt even played the piano when he pissed. It was odd to see his piano stool dripping during performances of Année de Pèlerinage that were absolutely gripping. The Baron, both bodacious and humongous, was large Charles Mingus. On both mouth and bass, he played his ass. Thomas Wolfe wolfed herds of words. This is Le Matin dans la Rue de Fleury, number 27. Gertrude Stein arose at 9, and arose, and arose, and arose. You can do that one all kinds of ways. You can do it sort of quick, maybe Poulenc, you know, Gertrude Stein arose at 9 and arose and arose and arose, or you can do it sort of like Bruckner. Gertrude Stein arose at 9 and arose and arose and arose. It's fun to kind of do it in different ways. Clara Hughes, the author of these Clara Hughes, wrote them strictly to chase the blues. "Gee, I think they're neat," said her illiterate birth girlfriend, Pete. Here are a couple of lyrics. They're harder to write than Clara used. At least for me they are. "O blazing star, there was an old comet named Haley with a tail shaped like a shillelagh. When it came into orbit, the earthlings mistook it for an haute cuisine carrot in aioli." This is about the English watercolor painter John Sell Cotman. "Assessing the angle of Ingleboro caused Cotman to dangle his single bore in a glish bit of clay mixed with Payne's gray he kept in a monochrome shingle burrow." Those are all kind of North of England bits and pieces. I've always been interested in how facile at times headlines in the National Enquirer were. Some of them are really remarkable. "Space aliens turned our sun into an olive." You feel hard pushed to do better than that, or at least I do. So I wrote a series of called Scumbags from Parnassus, which are like tabloids. And they're rather raucous, but don't mind. First one is, "Boy whore conducts Boston Symphony Orchestra." Industrial strength lesbians destroy half of South Carolina. They've got the bomb and they're black. America's name is changed to Merca. Only 3.9% of postgraduates can spell either. God gets the janitor's job at Graceland as Elvis takes command of planet Earth.
You're listening to Wordplay on WPVM 103.5 FM, the progressive voice of the mountains. Today, we're celebrating the life and career of Jonathan Williams. Jonathan's reading from his book, Jubilant Thicket, at City Lights Books in Silva, North Carolina, in May of 2005. Now let's go back to the reading.
These are from a section called Bug Tussle, which brings us a little closer to home. B. Hensley hammers an iron chinkapin leaf on his anvil near Spruce Pine, North Carolina, and he cogitates on the nature of two beauty spots. In the Linville Gorge, I know this place. Now it's a rock wall. You look up, it's covered in punctatum, all heaven. That's a sight. Up on Smoky, you ease up at daybust and see the first light in the tops of the tulip trees. Now boys, that just naturally grinds and polishes the soul. Makes it normal again. I mean, it's really pretty. Uncle Iv surveys his domain from his rocker of a Sunday afternoon as Aunt Dory starts to chop the kindling. Mr. Williams, let's you and me move t'other side the house. The woman chopping wood's might nigh the awkwardest thing I seen. Dilmus Hall, who assures us he's been right here in the flesh for about 4,004 years, one way or another, and hasn't bathed once, delivers some gospel. You have eyes outside and eyes inside. Your heart is full of eyes. To communicate, you put the two together. Amen. The custodian of a field of whiskey bushes by the Nolichucky River speaks. Took me a peck of really ripe tomatoes up into the grassy gap one night, and 2 quarts of good stockade, and just laid there, sipping and tasting, and looking again the moon at them sort of fish eyes in the jar you get when it's right. Boys, I'm talking about something good. A ride in a blue Chevy from Alum Cave Trail to Newfound Gap. Going hiking? Get in. Oh, the Smokies are okay, but me, I go for theosophy, higher things, Hindu-type philosophy. None of this liquor and sex. I like it on what we call the astral plane. I reckon I get more ethereal by the hour. Buddy, you won't believe this, but how old you reckon the Earth is? The Earth is precisely 156 trillion years old. I got this book from headquarters in Wheaton, Illinois. Says it is. I'll tell you something else. There are exactly 144 kinds of people on this Earth. 12 signs, and the signs change every 2 hours. That's 144. I'm Scorpio with Mars over the water. Here's something else interesting. Here's something else interesting. Back 18 million years, people was only one sex only. I'd like to explain that. It's right here in this pamphlet, 50 cents. Never married, lived with my mother in Ohio. She died. I'm over in Oak Ridge in a machine shop. Say, what kind of place is Denver? Think I'll sell this car, go to Denver, and set up a center. Name's Davis. What's yours? Three sayings from Highlands, North Carolina. This was Doris Talley, who was a housewife and a fine gardener. But pretty though as roses is, you can put up with the thorns. Butler Jenkins was a caretaker. You live until you die, if the limb don't fall. Sam Cresswell was my auto mechanic. Your points is blue, and your timing's a week off. The hermit, Cackleberry Brown, on human vanity. Can't call your name, but your face is easy. Come sit. Now, some folks figure they're better than cow flop. They ain't. Not a bit. Just good to hold the world together like hooved up ground. That's it. Carving a few pine lines with Carl McKenzie up Snaky Holler, Nada, Kentucky, one of our greater addresses. Nada, Kentucky. How old are you, Carl? I'm 50 years old, not counting the 34 years I went barefoot. Have you been carving much? Not much, boys. I'm about carved out. Been whittling on that bird for a week and just making shavings. I was at the cemetery just yesterday. And it just about tore me up seeing Edna's name on that stone. Of course, if I hear it of a widow woman with a lot of money and a bad cough, I might do it just one more time. The epitaph on Uncle Nick Grindstaff's grave on the Iron Mountain above Shady Valley, Tennessee. I lived alone, suffered alone, died alone. This one's called Aljadu. Yorkshireman went into a German Street hat shop. Whippersnapper Clark snipped out real posh-like. "And what is your pleasure, sir?" Yorkshireman said back. "Fookin' and pigeons, but what I'm wantin' now is a flat at, sonny." This is something said to me by a No, I'll read the kind of elegy for this old farmer in the Yorkshire Dales I used to know, Alan Beresford. It's kind of done in dialect. "He was old as the fells, street as an arse, sharp as winds, wick as a lop, wild as winter thunder, nice as an otter. And his throat wore midland slippy, and he is deed as a steon, but not gone, but not gone." Two pastorals for Samuel Palmer at Shoreham in Kent. The title is a line of Palmer's, "If the night could get up and walk." "I cannot put my hand into a cabbage to turn on the light, but the moon moves over the field of dark cabbage, and an exchange fills all veins. The cabbage is also a globe of light. The two globes, now two eyes in my saturated head." And then the second one of that series is, "One must try behind the hills. Eight great dahlias stood beyond the mountains. They set fire to the sun in a black wood beyond the mountains, in the valley of vision. In the valley of vision, the fission of flowers yields all power in the valley of vision. Eight suns on eight stems, a flame. LeConte High Top. Under the rondelay, the sun. Into the wind and rain, a winter wren. Again, again, its song, needling the pines." I'll read you this one. This is one of the earliest poems in the book, and I still think it's a pretty successful poem. It was written about 1958. It's a celebration of a great baseball player named Stan Musial. "Oh, for a muse of fire. Date Tuesday, May 13th, 1958, a date previously memorable in history for the birth of Joe Louis, 1914, the Empress Maria Theresa, 1717, and the beheading of Johann van Olden Barnevelt, 1619. Place, Wrigley Field, Chicago, Illinois. Time, 3:06 p.m. Warm and sunny. Time, 3:06 p.m. Warm and sunny, breeze steady, right to left. Attendance, 5,692, paid. Situation, top of the sixth. Cardinals trailing the Cubs, 3-1, one out. Gene Green on second. Public address, batting for Jones, number six, Stan Musial. The muse muscles up. Stan the man stands in. And Hosanna, Hosanna, Hosanna's boy, Mo Drabowski, comes in. 2-2, a curveball, outside corner, higher than intended. I figured he'd hit it in the ground. It felt fine. A line shot to left down the line, rolling deep for a double. It felt fine. Say, Stan, baby, how's it feel to hit 3,000? It feels fine. Still waters for Loreen Niedecker, 1903-1970. She sained words as others, stars or carp. Laconic as a pebble in the rock river, along the bank where the peony flowers fall. Her tall friend, the pine tree, is still there to see. A mathem for J.R.R. Tolkien. On the streams of Winderness, outside the Shire, the pipeweed grows with the golden seal. Do not forget this in your zeal, the emperies of elms and men are flowers. Shun ranunculus at Raven Knob, and black cohosh and columbine, and rue anemone, the human minions, the elven votaries. Beware the hellebore on Raven Bald or Barad-dûr or Erebor. An omen for Stevie Smith, who said once, being alive is like being in enemy territory. This is your aunt, Stevie, and oh, you must hurry. The man in black who waits tonight along the like wake walk has a gown for you the color of rowan berries, a gown borne in air by hornets, hagworms, and ants riding the backs of great bustards and herons. Your cats, brown and fry and hide, yes, Stevie, they too shall come at last to Whinnymore. The five of you shall dance that heath to death. And the last one is a poem about our friend Basil Bunting, who was a marvelous English poet and used to visit us a lot because we lived about 3 miles from the Quaker meeting house called Brig Flats, where he'd been coming since he was a child in 1913. My Quaker atheist friend, who has come to this meeting house since 1913, smokes and looks out over the Rothy to Holm Fell. What do you do anything for? You do it for what the medievals would call something like the glory of God. Doing it for money, that doesn't do it. Doing it for vanity, that doesn't do it. Doing it to justify a disorderly life, that doesn't do it. Look at Brig Flats here. It represents the best that the people were able to do. They didn't do it for gain. In fact, they must have taken a loss. Whether it is a stone next to a stone, or a word next to a word, it is the glory, the simple craft of it. And money and sex aren't worth bugger all, not bugger all. Solid, common, vulgar words, the ones you can touch, the ones that yield, and a respect for the music. What else can you tell them? Thank you.
You're listening to Wordplay on WPVM 103.5 FM, the progressive voice of the mountains. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. We've been listening to Jonathan Williams reading from Jubilant Thicket in May of 2005. After the reading, City Lights proprietor Joyce Moore invited questions from the audience, and someone asked Jonathan to talk about his experience at Black Mountain College. Here, once again, is Jonathan.
That's a dollar a word. Yeah, that's a dollar a word. Well, I was there 1951 through the end of the college in 1956, and I had dropped out of Princeton in order to get away from that. Didn't quite know what I wanted to do, but Black Mountain served me very well. I don't know whether you could have called it, at the end, you might not be able to call it a college, but it was like a place for artists to live and learn from each other. At the end, I think there were 7 faculty and 6 students in 1956. So it had, you know, pretty well closed down by then. How could you not like it? I mean, you had people like John Cage and Stefan Volpe and Lou Harrison and in music, and Charles Olson, of course, leading the writing department. And you had people like Aaron Siskind and Harry Callahan as photographers. Something happened when you put that many good people together in a small place. And as I say, I started everything there. Started the Jargon Press and started writing, you know, trying to write better. Olson was a hard teacher, and he didn't put up with too much, and he hated people that imitated him, which was hard not to do with. He was such a, you know, sort of really flaming talent, and his style was so interesting. So it took me about maybe 5 to 10 years before I started writing something other than Olson imitations, which is okay. I was still under 30. So. Just a great place to be. You know, it's now a boys' camp, a very successful boys' camp, Rockmont. And it's in better condition now than it was 50 years ago. Black Mountain never had any money, and the faculty were supposed to help, but they didn't help any more than they had to. So. So things were sort of falling to pieces. But there hasn't been anything else like it. I suppose for good common sense reasons that most people don't like to work for nothing. Most people don't. I don't know what else I can tell you. I just found myself quite a different person after about 2 or 3 years there, which was fine with me because I knew I didn't want to be somebody like a Princeton graduate. I mean, everybody there was, the former Secretary of State, James Baker. He was a class behind me or something. And to watch him on television is enough to make me ill. It's terrible. And most of the people at Princeton were very wealthy, very empty-handed. We're going to enter Daddy's law firm or his brokerage business, and they had absolutely no interest much in what was being taught them. And yet there were a lot of terrific teachers at Princeton. You couldn't deny that there were lots of them. But I couldn't make a contact with them, and I couldn't make a contact with the students there. I just couldn't. So I did some things here and there. I went to Illinois Institute of Technology and studied with Stanley William Hayter, the etcher and engraver. Started picking up a lot of sort of talent in graphic arts, so eventually I could start my press. I knew how to design books pretty much from the beginning. And then got to Black Mountain about 4 years after I left Princeton. And I'm certainly glad I went. I've continued to be impressed by a lot of my contemporaries there, and most of the teachers, just fantastic. I mean, John Cage, Lou Harrison, Stefan Volpe, I mean, there wasn't anything better running around anywhere in the United States. They were terrific. So, as I say, it just worked out that way. I mean, I was born in Nashville, but never lived there. My father got a job, and that was the Depression. He got a job in Washington, and I was lucky enough to be brought up in Washington, went to school there. What a great town to be living in as a child. Music, all those galleries, I mean, just terrific. Bad baseball team, but otherwise. Otherwise, everything was pretty good. Good football team. Yeah. I was watching the afternoon of Pearl Harbor. I was watching the Washington Redskins play the New York Giants at Griffith Stadium. So that seems like a long time ago. And it is, actually.
What drew you to Black Mountain College? Was it very well known at that time?
Not really. When I was out at the Institute of Design in Chicago, one of the Black Mountain faculty came out and gave a presentation. Her name was M.C. Richards. She told us kind of what it was about, what was available, and so on. And I had actually wanted to go down there to study with Harry Callahan, the photographer, but he was at the Institute, but he was teaching an advanced course, and I'd had no training in camera work at all. So he said, well, I can't teach you this spring, but I'll be in North Carolina in the summer, and I'm going to bring my friend Aaron Siskin from New York, so we can teach you. Well, what could have been better than that? You know, two of the best photographers ever in the United States. So then when I got down there, suddenly I saw this enormous man where we were eating, and that was Mr. Olson, who was about 6'8 and weighed about 300. He's a huge guy with the energy to go with it. So he was thrown in for free. Yeah, he was a little bit on the side there. Lagniappe, I think they call it down in Mississippi, Louisiana. And then who else? Well, Volpe, Stefan Volpe was another guy with a sort of temperament like Olson, just you know, burning all the time. Just great guy, just a great man. I haven't been able to fathom his music as well as I'd like. It's very tough, but I certainly liked him. Great, great friend.
There are books up here. There's food to eat. And so if you'd like, I'll just move this table right over this way.
We've been listening to Jonathan Williams reading from Jubilant Thicket in May 2005, and that's Wordplay for this week. Wordplay is produced in the studios of WPVM, Asheville, North Carolina, by Wild Dell Productions. Our programs are available 24/7 from the archive page of WPVM.org for the full week after their broadcast. So if you ever miss one, just go to the station website, find the archive link, and scroll down to click on the stream or podcast buttons. We now have a new email address, wordplayradio@gmail.com. So drop us a line if you'd like to respond to something you've heard or to tell us what you'd like to hear in the future. We're also on the web at wordplayradio.blogspot.com. Today's music was by Miles Davis, Charles Mingus, and Ralph Vaughan Williams, as performed by the Academy of St. Martin's in the Fields, under the direction of Neville Mariner. I hope Jonathan, if he was tuned in, enjoyed it. Join us again next week for Wordplay.